happening in Texas as well. Texas tried to pass this very, very similar provision. I think this calls out a key thing here, is that it seems as if the federal government in some of these cases is sort of playing the other side and is, you know, against Texas or potentially this new Arizona bill. But actually, they are vying for the authority to enforce immigration themselves. They are not on opposite sides of this issue, as we see yesterday with this new executive order, which is the most severe crackdown on asylum we've seen in years.
And in the last few seconds we have, John, what will this mean when it comes to border deaths?
Well, as I said, you know, limiting legal and safe and somewhat orderly pathways for people to present asylum claims immediately pushes them deeper into the desert. It forces them to ford or try to get across the river in Texas. And we know what happens there. We have a pattern that is going back decades now of people being pushed by these draconian measures to take to the deserts and the wilderness, and they die. And
we have to leave it there, but we're going to continue this discussion and post online at democracynow.org and talk about your case for open borders. Then we're also going to do an interview in Spanish and post it on our Spanish website. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
The month of June is Pride Month, an opportunity to shine a light on the vast heritage of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer and questioning, intersex, asexual or agender, as well as two-spirit community members. Here at KBOO, we will be celebrating LGBTQIA2S+ heritage on Tuesdays, 7 to 8 p.m., with live panels from our studios, where we will have guests from these communities talk to us about their culture, presence, struggles, and relevance. Tune in to KBOO every Tuesday throughout the month of June and into July, 7 to 8 p.m., and join us in celebrating LGBTQIA2S+ heritage with our special Pride Month live panels. Only on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a Washington State initiative described as force outing of students takes effect despite a legal challenge.
A record heat wave hits the southern U.S.
And pharmacy closures in Oregon put the state near the bottom of the list for prescription services.
Good evening. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, June 5th, 2024. I'm Chris Gao.
And I'm John G. A new Washington State parental rights law, criticized as being forced outing, will be allowed to take effect this week. A court commissioner just declined to issue an emergency order to temporarily block it. The law, known as Initiative 2081, expands some rights already granted to parents under state and federal law. It requires schools to notify parents in advance of medical services offered to their child, except in emergencies, and of a medical treatment arranged by the school that results in follow-up care beyond normal hours. It also grants parents the right to review their child's medical and counseling records and expands the circumstances under which parents can opt their child out of sex education. King County Superior Court Commissioner Mark Hillman said the civil liberties groups, school district, and youth services organizations challenging the law did not show it would create the kind of imminent harm to warrant blocking it. A hearing before a trial judge is scheduled for June 21st. Critics say the measure could harm students who go to school clinics seeking referrals for birth control, counseling related to their gender identity or sexual orientation, and treatment or support for sexual assault or domestic violence. Experts say in many of those cases, the students do not want their parent to know. The ACLU of Washington is challenging the measure. They say it violates a state constitution, which requires that new laws not revise or revoke old laws without explicitly saying so. For example, state law ensures the privacy of medical records for young people authorized to receive abortion care, even without medical consent or parental consent. The new law would give parents the right to be notified before their child receives such care, without specifically saying that it amends the specific privacy law. William McGinty, an attorney for the state, argued the law is constitutional and the plaintiffs had not demonstrated that they were entitled to a temporary restraining order.
The first heat wave of the season has arrived, and it's earlier than expected. Much of the U.S. Southwest has already seen triple-digit temperatures. Also, forecasters say temperatures are likely to exceed 110 degrees by tomorrow. Much of an area stretching from southeast California to central Arizona has seen or will see their hottest weather since last September. The National Weather Service says a number of cities will wind up with record daily highs. Excessive heat warnings were issued through Friday evening for parts of southeast California, southern Nevada, and Arizona, with some areas seeing temperatures 10 to 20 degrees above average. The unseasonably hot weather is expected to spread into the Pacific Northwest by the end of the week. Yesterday's highs reached 106 degrees in Bluehead City, Arizona, 104 in Phoenix, and 108 in Death Valley. The heat already prompted the U.S. Border Patrol to issue a warning. After it confirmed that four migrants died last weekend from heat-related causes while attempting to cross into the country in southeast New Mexico, Anthony Good, the agency's El Paso sector chief, urged migrants not to risk the extreme heat. Good said, quote, "The desert environment is extremely unforgiving, especially during the summer months. We urge anyone considering crossing illegally to understand the severe risks involved," end quote. Fire crews were on high alert in Arizona, where fire restrictions have been in effect since before Memorial Day. Those most in danger from the heat are people outdoors, especially homeless people in downtown areas, who often lack sufficient access to water, shade, and air conditioning.
Portland janitors and security officers want their new 4-year contract to demonstrate the essential nature of their work and to reflect the rising cost of living. Kathleen Shannon has more on the story.
Negotiations for janitors who clean the buildings of some of the region's biggest employers. The janitors, represented by SEIU Local 49, work at places like the Oregon Health and Science University Hospital and the U.S. Bancorp Tower. Their current contract expires at the end of this month. Janitors were on the front lines during the COVID-19 pandemic, and the union says it wants to make sure the essential quality of their work is recognized. Another focus is the rising cost of living. Elena Jimenez, a janitor at Adidas, says the health benefits are helpful, but she hopes the new contract will lower the cost.
They can help us get our pace a little bit less than what we are paying right now because, you know, the cost of living is really hard right now.
The cost of living in Portland increased 22% between 2010 and 2020, with the cost of housing peaking 30% higher than the national average, according to a 2021 report. Last week, about 100 people rallied outside the Oregon Convention Center in Portland on Friday to show support for the janitors. Renato Quintero serves on the executive board of SEIU Local 49 and is a janitor at Intel. He wants the companies employing union workers to understand that retaining them benefits both the workers and their employers.
To offer good jobs with good benefits will be better for the retention of the workers instead of spending all the amount of resources looking for new people that don't go to stay there for a long time.
For the first time, bargaining for both SEIU Local 49 janitors and security officers is happening at the same time. Both contracts combined will affect nearly 2,000 workers. I'm Kathleen Shannon reporting for the Oregon News Service.
Oregon has the second fewest retail pharmacies per capita in the nation. Only Alaska has fewer. 36 Oregon pharmacies closed last year, with several more following this year. Brian Mayo is the executive director of the Oregon Pharmacy Association. Mayo said, quote, "With how few pharmacies Oregon has, every pharmacy should be considered a critical access pharmacy," end quote. Chain pharmacies are more common in Oregon than other states, and independently owned pharmacies are rarer. The number of pharmacies was growing before the COVID-19 pandemic, but the industry has since faced challenges. That includes things like changing shopping habits, falling prescription reimbursement, and increasing theft. Large retail chains have closed underperforming brick-and-mortar drugstores and pushed mail-order services. Across the country, over 7,000 pharmacies have closed since 2019.
President Biden signs an executive order authorizing officials at the U.S.-Mexico border to immediately deport asylum seekers if they have entered the country in any way other than through a legal point of entry. The sweeping order came down on Tuesday, and it created a cap on how many people could claim asylum a day, 2,500. All others will be denied or deported. Prior to this order, asylum seekers entering the U.S. were, in accordance with U.S. and international law, granted the same rights as those who had entered at legal entry points. Since border crossings between ports of entry are currently exceeding the order's trigger of 2,500 people, enforcement could begin as soon as this week, bringing mass deportations of people already in the U.S. When migrants come into the U.S. seeking asylum, they're given a future court date and allowed into the country until that time, which can be years. Biden's order utilizes the same section of the Immigration and Nationality Act that Donald Trump used while in office to ban Muslims and other immigrants. Representative Pramila Jayapal of Washington said, quote, "We should be distinguishing ourselves from Donald Trump on immigration. We should be offering the contrast." The ACLU has announced that it will challenge this order in court. ACLU attorney Lee Gallant said, quote, "A policy that effectively shuts down asylum would raise clear legal problems, just as it did when the Trump administration tried to end asylum," end quote.
President Biden limits border crossings, Republicans ponder legislative action over the New York Trump verdict, and Attorney General Merrick Garland is on the defensive. With more on the story, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I've come here today to do what the Republicans in Congress refuse to do: take the necessary steps to secure our border.
President Joe Biden signed an executive order reducing the number of asylum seekers the U.S. will allow across the border daily. The order uses a section of the law former President Donald Trump used in his highly restrictive migration policies, but it comes after Republicans abandoned a bipartisan border security bill at the direction of the former president. The order restricts the number of migrants who can claim asylum once illegal crossings outside entry points hit 2,500 per day, but it exempts unaccompanied minors. California Democrat Pete Aguilar says that approach is too one-sided.
I'm concerned that this is just, you know, the enforcement-only side of the strategy, but I'm confident that we can continue to lift up programs like temporary protected status, like support for those with DACA.
Crossings have drastically declined this year due to crackdowns in Mexico that are stopping tens of thousands. Experts call this unsustainable, and advocates like Rosa Santana with Envision Freedom Fund call Biden's executive order a misstep in addressing the long-term crisis.
So this is very inhumane. You know that people are not going to be able to seek asylum, which is, you know, a right that everyone has, like to seek a better life. And, you know, we know like how difficult it is in so many different countries.
Congressional Republicans charge the executive order is not strong enough and should have come sooner. Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene is again threatening to impeach Biden over the border in spite of opposition from Republican leadership. Meanwhile, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson is threatening legislative action in response to Trump's felony conviction in New York. Congress has no authority over state courts, but since the guilty verdict, Johnson and other Republicans have sharply attacked what they call biased prosecutions by activist DAs. Johnson would use Congress's power over the federal Justice Department.
We're looking at various approaches to what can be done here through the appropriations process, through the legislative process, through bills that we'll be advancing through our committees and putting on the floor for passage, and also through oversight.
That comes as Attorney General Merrick Garland defended the Justice Department to a House Judiciary Committee. Garland told lawmakers that baseless attacks and conspiracy theories undermine federal law enforcement officers. He called the attacks unfounded and unprecedented, but said even threats to hold him in contempt won't change what they do.
These attacks have not, and they will not, influence our decision-making. I view contempt as as a serious matter. But I will not jeopardize the ability of our prosecutors and agents to do their jobs effectively in future investigations.
Last month, two Republican-led committees voted to hold Garland in contempt for not turning over audio recordings from the federal probe into President Biden's handling of classified records. Finally, the state of Wisconsin is bringing felony charges against three Trump allies for attempting to overturn the 2020 election results, the fifth battleground state to do so. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth look at the Southern Poverty Law Center's new report, The Year in Hate and Extremism, 2023. Then, we speak with Street Roots correspondent Ellen Clark about her latest article on pets living unhoused. At 6, it's Exploration with Michio Kaku, and at 7, the Global Sale. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 49 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be warm and sunny with a high of 78. Today in history, in 1989, the unidentified person known as Tank Man halted the progress of a column of advancing tanks for over half an hour after the student-led Tiananmen Square protests. The quote of the day is from American journalist Bill Moyers. He said, quote, "Bullies, political bullies, economic bullies, and religious bullies cannot be appeased. They have to be opposed with courage, clarity, and conviction. This is never easy. These true believers don't fight fair. Robert's Rules of Order is not one of their holy texts."
Thousands of mostly ultranationalist Israelis took part in an annual march through a sensitive Palestinian area of Jerusalem today, with some aggravating wartime tensions by chanting, quote, "death to Arabs." Jerusalem is a religious center for the Middle East, and it has been surprisingly free of conflict throughout the Israel-Hamas war. But now there are concerns the annual march could ignite broader unrest. Today, 3,000 security officers were deployed to the march. They stressed that the march would not enter the sprawling Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, the third holiest site in Islam. Counter-protests were planned throughout the day. 3 years ago, the march helped set off an 11-day war in Gaza. Marchers convened outside the Damascus Gate, a central gathering place for Palestinians. They chanted anti-Arab and anti-Islamic slogans, danced, and waved Israeli flags. Even before the march began, crowds scuffled with police and threw plastic bottles at a journalist. Police officers arrested several Palestinians, leading them away with their hands bound behind their backs. Tensions over the Israel-Hamas war in Gaza remain extraordinarily high. The war began with Hamas's October 7th attack into southern Israel, in which militants killed some 1,200 people and abducted around 250 hostages. Israel responded with a massive offensive that has killed over 36,000 Palestinians. President Biden just outlined a phased ceasefire and hostage release, but Israel says it won't end the war without destroying Hamas, while the militant group is demanding a long-lasting ceasefire and the full withdrawal of Israeli forces.
There's a new Eastern Oregon clinic for tribal members. It is intended to address gaps in care. With that story and more, it's Antonio Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonio Gonzalez. A new clinic has recently opened on the Grand Ronde Reservation in Eastern Oregon to address gaps in care for tribal members. Eric Tigetoff has more.
The public health clinic expands the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde's health system and will provide a range of benefits, including preventative services like vaccinations, dental care, and nutrition classes. Kelly Rowe, health director of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, says the goal of the clinic is to ensure tribal members have health services nearby.
The whole thought behind the big clinic was to bring everything here to Grand Ronde so people could get it without having to travel.
With the clinic, members won't have to drive long distances for most of their healthcare needs. The closest city is 50 miles away. Enrolled members of the Grand Ronde can get free health services from the hospital. Tribal members say self-reliance is non-negotiable because of their long history of mistreatment by the federal government. The Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde were created in 1857 after the federal government forcibly removed the 29 distinct bands of the Tillamook people from the Oregon coast. Rose says the goal is to add even more health services to the clinic.
They're very committed to making sure that they're providing health care and providing as much as possible for the membership.
The clinic also has an outdoor fish pit to help tribal members learn how to prepare traditional meals. I'm Eric Tegedoff.
About the only signs of the rare white raven that entertained Anchorage last winter are pictures posted on a Facebook page, taken before it disappeared. As KMBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, the bird remains a mystery.
Anchorage's love affair with the white raven began last October when it was spotted in a neighborhood called Spinard with lots of restaurants and lots of dumpsters. To the delight of photographers, the bird seemed to enjoy playing to the cameras and was quite vocal. But the bird went silent in April when it left town with most of the ravens that had wintered there. Biologists say this is normal, that ravens fly far afield in the summer in search of solitude to nest and raise their young. Even so, the white raven's departure left a hole in the heart of Spinard.
We're able to realize and see something that had kind of been foretold.
Charlene Uppick says Alaska natives have many stories about how white raven would someday appear as a messenger of hope and healing. Last winter, she says, she saw the bird a lot from her office building, headquarters for the group Native Movement. She says white raven's visits caused considerable excitement.
Oh, white raven out this window, and then you'd hear the whole building thump, 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 thump. Everyone would run across the building to the window to see the raven.
I couldn't really believe it. It was just kind of surreal in the moment.
Aaron Towark may have been one of the first people to photograph the bird. He saw it on October 20th as he walked along Spinard. At first, he thought it was a seagull.
But then I looked a little closer and there's another raven with it, and then it cawed. And I was like, is that a white raven?
Now, Towark does know something about raven sounds. He spent his childhood in Unalakleet learning how to talk to them. Towark says white raven marks an important turning point in his life. He was living in a hotel, waiting to get into an alcohol and drug treatment program, but relapsed and was kicked out.
But in that moment, it just kind of reawoke something in me. Felt wonder.
Towark eventually got into a treatment program and found sobriety. Towark says he never did get to try out his raven call on the bird, but perhaps if it returns to winter in Anchorage, he'll get a chance to say thank you. I'm Rhonda McBride.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
20% of women have been personally affected by the Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. Nadia Ramlagan tells us more about the effects in states with their own abortion bans.
As Texas made recent headlines for ruling against a group of women seeking abortion for serious pregnancy complications, polling finds one in five women age 18 to 49 living in West Virginia and other states where the procedure is banned say they or someone they know have had difficulty getting an abortion. Yvette Gomez at the healthcare advocacy nonprofit KFF says West Virginia currently bans abortion in all cases, except when the mother's life is in danger, or in cases of rape or incest. She notes the law does require victims to report the rape to the police and is only applicable up to 8 weeks of pregnancy for adults and 14 weeks for minors.
There's been virtually no abortions in the state of West Virginia since October 2022. People who live in West Virginia who need an abortion have to travel out of state to get an abortion. So they'd have to travel to like Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, or Ohio.
More women say the struggle to access reproductive care is taking a toll on their mental and physical health, triggering socioeconomic consequences for women forced to carry an unwanted pregnancy to term. She says women denied abortions are more likely to report anxiety, stress, and lower self-esteem compared with women who received an abortion, and were also more likely to experience financial hardship.
They were less likely to have enough money to cover basic expenses like food, housing, and transportation, and were more likely to be enrolled in public assistance programs.
Gomez says a majority of women nationwide believe abortion should be legal in all or most cases and support physicians' right to perform abortions.
67% of women in states where abortion is banned and 71% of women where abortion is limited by gestational limits.
Under West Virginia law, doctors who violate the state's abortion ban can lose their medical license. This is Nadia Romlagan for West Virginia News Service.
Advocacy groups think young voters will have an especially prominent role in the November election. Strategies are being developed to court the often overlooked rural contingency. Mike Moen has more on the story.
As the 2024 election inches closer, candidates and civic engagement organizers are likely to try and connect with younger voters. But for college-age individuals from smaller towns, these connections are few and far between. The Rural Democracy Initiative says 63% of rural youth are infrequent or uncommitted voters, and they're among the least contacted by both nonpartisan and political operations. The organization is behind a new effort to strengthen civic engagement for this demographic. Wisconsin-based groups are doing similar work. Emma Frederick with Leaders Igniting Transformation says rural college students from the western half of the state often feel overlooked.
They note that this is the first time that anyone's talked to them about voting. And while their parents might want to help or their parents don't know themselves, this is a new experience for them.
She says one of the main issues young voters from rural areas want addressed is a lack of resources in their hometown school districts. They want to see future generations benefit from having more aid to cover things like advanced placement courses. Nationally, RDI says these voters also prioritize health care, economic well-being, reproductive rights, and climate issues. Litz Crystal Egbo handles this form of outreach for Wisconsin's northeastern part of the state. She gets similar feedback on the lack of prior engagement with these students. She adds that in smaller communities that are becoming more diverse, there are calls for cultural needs to be considered.
They're also asking for having more diverse representation on their faculty and staff, having more diverse representation within local government and within community decision makers.
According to RDI, 24% of rural residents are people of color and many are immigrants. It also contends that young rural voters of color who lean towards pro-democracy policies are significantly underrepresented in elections. This is Mike Bowen for Wisconsin News Connection.
Chicagoans are planting trees in underserved areas. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. During a storm, trees help soak up excess water, and on a hot day, they provide cooling shade. But in many cities, decades of disinvestment have left low-income communities of color with little tree cover. Pueza Itaji is with Grow Greater Inglewood, a nonprofit based in a primarily black neighborhood of Chicago.
Inglewood has some of the highest temperatures in the city. And when it rains, we have significant flooding throughout the area because a lot of the spaces are vacant and are very paved.
So her group is participating in the Tree Ambassador Program, an effort led by the Morton Arboretum in partnership with the city to plant trees in under-resourced areas. Residents receive training and funding to be community tree advocates. They scout out planting locations and lead workshops to engage others. After people choose where they want trees, advocates request them from the city, and their requests are prioritized.
Some of the trees have been planted as quickly as 30 days, which is significant because it can take months in the usual process.
She says investing in Englewood's trees can help protect people from climate change and begin to repair some of the neglect the community has suffered. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is watching our government's accelerating crumble.
To paraphrase Allen Ginsberg, America, greed has overwhelmed your alleged principles and now you're nothing. The most important news last Thursday wasn't Trump's convictions, but the Republican Party's denial of the judicial system. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court is taking that Supreme part a bit too seriously. Washington, D.C. is about as far as you can get from Portland and still be in America, yet its tendrils and corrosives are everywhere, as well as setting the example for what those who govern locally can get away with. At least our Republican state senators just left the Capitol instead of trying to take it over, but they were outnumbered. All you and I can govern is ourselves. Be true to yourself and those you admire. Be smart with your defiance of those claiming power over you. Our rulers have nothing to fear but us having nothing to fear. Every day can be election day. Vote through your actions, your compassion, your respect for people and the natural world. Vote by showing up. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, June 5th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips to 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael. The producer is Josh Salem, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Tegetoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Mike Moen, Edwin J. Vieira, Kathleen Shannon, Nadia Ramlagan, and Dr. Anthony Leibovitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2828BH Philomath on 104.3, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Chris Gow.
And I'm John G. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. On June 4th, the Southern Poverty Law Center, or SPLC, released its annual report, The Year in Hate and Extremism 2023. They describe it as a comprehensive analysis of the groups and organizational infrastructure upholding white supremacy in the United States. For Oregon, in 2023, the SPLC tracked 23 hate and anti-government groups in the state. That's a slight decrease